That was Wayward Saints with In the Wild. Wayward Saints just happened to be my very special guest this week. My name is Stuart McKee, and this is Musicians FAQ.
You've got to love yourself before you love anybody else.
Well, I am absolutely thrilled about my guests this week. They're an old school rock and roll band who are fresh and new on the scene and on a mission to bring back the spirit of real rock and roll, both to the old and new generations, with influences such as Humble Pie, Allman Brothers, Faces and the Rolling Stones, just to name a few. And to me, they're like AC/DC with harmonies. What a glorious band, featuring the powerhouse vocals of Lindsey Coleman, the twin lead and rhythm guitar work of Darren Flower and Justin Bennett, and the tight, thunderous rhythm section of Bill Bertram on bass and Aaron Bennett on drums. I am so excited to have them here in the studio today with me. Please welcome the future of rock and roll in Canada and hopefully the world, Wayward Saints. All right, so joining me on Musicians FAQ this week is Darren Flower and Lindsey Coleman from Wayward Saints. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, man. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, thank you, Stuart.
My pleasure. It's so great to see you both face to face. Darren and I have known each other for a little while now, as we're both hosting our own radio shows, and we've been interacting a little bit on social media. And Lindsey, I just had the pleasure of sort of pseudo social media introduction to you last week or the week before. So it's really great to be able to sit and chat with the two of you from the band Wayward Saints. So normally what I do is I go back kind of the beginning, and there's two of you on the show, so we only have an hour, but maybe we'll just kind of skim over the highlights. Start with you, Lindsey. Where were you born? What was the childhood like? And talk about maybe some of the things that led you to music.
Sure, yeah. I was born in Ontario, Canada. London, Ontario, actually. What my childhood was pretty great, actually. I mean, I grew up around a really supportive family and a pretty musical family. My mother was a professional singer, and my uncle's a professional singer-songwriter. So that really sort of started a lot for me. My mom had me singing at a very early age. She was a choir director and, had me on stage very early performing and, you know, just getting that vibe. But I think in general, my mom was, you know, really good about making sure that I kind of took a professional stance in music pretty early, like I was in singing contests and things like that. So that really kind of started it. Picking up the guitar, because my uncle was really the only one in the family that actually played an instrument professionally. And so that just seemed like the logical thing to do, was to sort of go the guitar route. And I don't play guitar in this band. Maybe eventually I might. But, that's kind of how things got started, I guess.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And it's nice having that support right from the beginning, where a lot of people, maybe there's music around the house, but parents kind of think, oh, you're crazy to get into this business, but you've already had a bit of a background on that. Although I have found more often than not, with the interviews and the guests I've talked to, most of the parents and the families have been really supportive. So, Darren, what was your background like?
Well, from the age of 5, I was forced to have piano lessons. And, you know, I was 5, so I never really connected to it. I didn't care. I didn't know why I was doing it. And I did it from 5 to 14, and I ended up actually hating music for a long time. And the only music that I was really into was video game music, because I was a normal kid, and I didn't want to play stupid piano. I just wanted to play baseball and video games. So by default, the only music I really heard was video game music at that point. So I was forced to do piano, but by the age of 12, I started to discover rock music, and I started taking guitar lessons, and I had a wonderful teacher who never talked to me like a little kitty, and was cool, was very knowledgeable, had the right, kind of demeanor for the job, and, you know, I credit him a lot for helping me, you know, discover rock and roll at a young age.
Nice.
I was at the right age, and of course, at that time, there was all this cool stuff in the 90s and whatever, so, I was a young kid, I was forced to play music. But at the age of 11, 12, it really hit me like a brick to the face.
Wow, I can relate. So what were some of the bands that you were listening to back in the day? Who were some of your faves?
Okay, so the first song that I think really got me was that rock opera song from Meatloaf. Do you remember that one? 'Cause I would do anything for love. I was deeply obsessed with that song. Don't laugh. Okay, you can laugh.
No, it's just funny.
It is funny. No, but it's a really well-written song when you think about it. Yes. And I was 11 years old, and I was so inspired from it. And I made my father, we were on a vacation in Mexico, and I made him buy me the cassette, which dates me a little bit. I mean, the MP3. I made him buy that for me.
I mean, it is an epic song.
It's an epic song. And to this day, as an older gentleman, I still love this song. If anything, it's gotten better for me.
That's funny, actually. I mean, and talking about dating yourself, I mean, you just made me feel a little bit older. Yes, you still...
25. Get,
well, no. You're how old?
25.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to Meatloaf when it first came out on the vinyl record, and it was the first album before, like, sort of, that was that song that you're talking about was the song I think we had to wait like 10 years as a follow-up second album to the first huge album that was at every high school dance and every wedding that I've ever been to. Yeah. Paradise by the Dashboard Lights, I think, was the big hit on that one from the Bat Out of Hell album. But yeah, killer vocal and killer songwriting by Jim Steinman, who I think just passed away not too long ago, just recently. All the greats are fading away. So luckily we have some new greats coming along to take their place. So how did you get back into sort of the 70s rock? When did that transition happen?
Okay, well, you know, so when I was 12, I was getting guitar lessons and stuff like that. And I definitely had a wild spirit. So I fell into the heavy metal for a long time. And I listened to a lot of angry, aggressive stuff that maybe a 12-year-old shouldn't be listening to. But around 1920, I started to kind of mellow out. I was in a fork in the road. I'm like, do I do metal? I never told her this. Okay, exclusive. But I was around 19 years old, and I was thinking, do I go into metal or do I do something else? And, you know, I always loved the melodies and the happy vibes of the 70s rock. So around 1920, I did a hard switch. And I mean, I'll always love metal, but I really love the melodies and the happy thoughts and stuff. And I was around 1920 when I started to do that.
Nice, nice. What were some of the first bands that grabbed you from the old school era? And I know you feature a lot of them on your show now. So.
Right. So when I was a younger lad listening to metal, I also did like Zeppelin, not love them yet. I did like the Black Crowes, but I didn't love them yet because I was really into like rocking hard.
Yeah.
But around 18, 19, Shake Your Money Maker from the Black Crowes and Southern Harmony especially was like, oh my God, I think I got to do that. So for a long time, I was treating it like the Bible. I'm like, I think that's what I kind of have to do. That feels right. Like, as much as I love metal, I don't think I want to play it and, you know, tour with it and stuff like that. And it just felt better to do that style of music. And that album right there was a great introduction to the blues rock world.
Yeah, 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 for sure. Great band. And I actually had the pleasure of seeing them in concert many, many years ago when they first sort of came around. There's a whole kind of resurgence with bands like the Black Crowes and Georgia Satellites and all these guys that were kind of paying homage to the Stones and the Faces and the old Zeppelin stuff. And it was really cool. So Lindsay, how about you? What kind of music did you first start listening to? Has it been consistently sort of in the heavier rock all along, or did you start out somewhere else?
So, yeah, because I was exposed to music and a lot of music at a pretty young age, we used to go to like bluegrass and gospel jamborees and things like that in like community halls, and there'd be a lot of that going on. So that was early. My mom's vinyl collection consisted of like Linda Ronstadt and the Mamas and the Papas. That was huge.
Cool.
So, you know, I'm like, you know, 5 years old and vibing out to Linda Ronstadt, right? So, I mean, it's not typical, but that was kind of an earlier start for me. Mamas and the Papas were huge because of the harmonies, and
yeah.
I wanted to be able to sing harmonies as well as my mother, which I don't even know if I still do that to this day. I think she's better at it than I am. But yeah, and sort of getting Simon and Garfunkel, sort of like more of that folk singer-songwriter, you know, rootsy kind of stuff. I didn't graduate into the heavy stuff, I'd say, until, you know, more like Darren, like when I was a teenager. You know, as a teenager, Darren and I are closer in age, so, you know, it was the 90s. I mean, grunge became a thing, like, you know, I'm a kid. And then I was really actually got into industrial music and sort of heavier stuff. I liked heavy metal as well. But I knew about classic rock. You know, I had a lot of older cousins and stuff. So my classic rock early on would be like, say, AC/DC and Deep Purple and things like that. And then I started to, you know, I always heard Southern rock, the band, you know, Roots Rock there. That was a huge album that everyone in my family loved, you know, or sorry, a band, but the Brown album specifically was always on play. And then graduating into Southern rock from there became a logical step, like Skynyrd, like my older cousins, like Skynyrd, nice. The Allman Brothers and stuff. So, and then I just started realizing, oh, there's a lot more out there, like Humble Pie and 10 Years After and, you know, Johnny Winter, all that stuff. So I think it was a natural evolution, but it's kind of funny as a teenager, I'm listening to like Nine Inch Nails and Nirvana and then, you know, but I always had my cousins kind of going, yeah, but this stuff's way cooler because it's always been around. Yeah. And then I eventually just listened to them about it and gave up the fad, if you will. You know,
that's so awesome. Well, I mean, and it warms my heart to hear all this music being talked about, because I mean, this is the stuff I grew up with. And for me, and I certainly wasn't getting any influence in rock or pop or anything from my parents. I think the only common denominator we might have had would have been Johnny Cash and Elvis Presley. But right. my older brother and sister and all their friends, and they used to have parties when the parents were away, and I was always the DJ. I'd sit in the corner, and you know, as a very young teen, and I won't say how young, and somebody had slipped me a beer to try to bribe me to put the record on, because my brother would always say, you know, Stu's in charge of the record player. So a lot of times it was just getting introduced to some great bands, and I already had a pretty wide net myself, so I can relate to what you're saying. Like, you're listening to Nine Inch Nails and then you're listening to this. I mean, I was listening to everything and drove my friends crazy. They're like, and what is with you and your weird taste in music? But there's nothing like the classics. And Darren, you're a big Southern rock guy too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I guess you can kind of say that. Sure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Maybe not. Maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe she's cooler than you. I don't know. I just.
No, she definitely is.
I don't know about that. I think everybody in this band has got a really eclectic taste, but there is a handful of bands that we all love collectively.
I have to say, I love Nine Inch Nails. I didn't know that you were into that kind of stuff. That's amazing. Because I love Trent Reznor, and he's actually a musical hero of mine.
Yeah.
I don't talk about it often, but he really, you know, he's kind of like a genius. I mean,
he really
you know,
is.
That's what I think, so.
There is a time in my life where like that was a huge part, like a couple years there. I'd say 2 years where
that's it.
I was listening. Well, it was a big, long 2 years. I mean,
I
when you're
guy.
A teenager, they stretch out.
I love that guy.
But yeah,
teenage
I mean,
time.
Nine Inch Nails, a Skinny Puppy, like you, Ministry, Danzig. Like, I mean, I loved all of it. But you know, because I could play an instrument and I didn't have a sample machine, I obviously was listening to stuff that I could play.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, and
we're learning stuff about each other right here. That's
amazing. Yeah, I thought that that's great. The show works in mysterious ways and bringing out things that you guys haven't had a chance
you
to discuss
in mysterious ways.
Yeah, well, there you go. And I noticed you hadn't offered Lindsay a beer there, but you know, you're nice enough.
Oh, I'm driving.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm all set.
Oh, she's all set.
Yeah.
Well, nobody offered me one.
You want a beer?
No, I'm good actually. But
I'll mail you one.
Well, thank you. I could have my son run and grab me one. It was funny though when you mentioned Trent Reznor again with Nine Inch Nails. I mean, and I actually kind of, I mean, I always heard of Trent Reznor. I heard of Nine Inch Nails. I'd been familiar with the music, but what brought me in more with them was when he wrote it was the song Hurt, when Johnny Cash recorded his song Hurt right near the end of his career, end of his life. And I saw a biography on him recently, which blew me away. I agree, he's definitely genius, and he's doing a lot of movie soundtracks and things now. So
hold on, was the first time you ever heard of Nine Inch Nails through Johnny Cash's version of Hurt?
Well, no, I'd heard of them before, but I wasn't really that familiar with them. I mean, I was aware of the band. I actually saw them at Woodstock 94. They played there with, I believe, unless I was mistaken. Now there was a lot of imbibing going on that weekend, so I might've been confused, but,
They were there.
Yeah. So, Aerosmith, I think we kind of had the heavier day. I think Aerosmith is probably the lightest of the bands that we saw. Well, actually we saw Crosby, Stills, Nash, that day as well, but it was, which is weird because everybody else in the start of the stage,
strange lineup.
Well, yeah. It was, and they had different stages, and we were trying to make it over to other stages, but it was such a shit show there with all the mud and the crowds and
well, yeah, wasn't Nine Inch Nails, weren't they all covered in mud?
Oh, it was crazy.
I think
yeah.
That
was,
show, yeah, yeah. They actually went and played in the mud and then went on stage, I think, on that
well,
area.
Yeah, I think anybody was trying to relive the Woodstock thing. Funny thing, we were on the top of a hill, and we were actually sitting on a huge group of porta potties, literally on the roof of these things, you know, drinking some beer and smoking some pot. And I can say that now because it's legal, but wasn't then. And we were watching people slide down this hill of mud, and they're all sliding down these hills and they're getting covered in mud. And then we're sitting here and we're kind of going, you know, we're at the top of the hill and we're sitting on these porta potties. I wonder if it's yeah. just mud that they're actually sliding in. So yeah. It's a little disturbing, but
it's also
yeah.
brave, you know, because somebody could have just pushed you over.
yeah. Well, no, these things are pretty stable. They were, yeah. I mean, we weren't right teetering on the edge, but close enough. I mean, and a lot of chaos ensued, but that's for another episode. But yeah.
I think I've seen Nine Inch Nails like 3 times, and I've actually twice. Seen the Black Crowes, I think 4 times.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've only seen Black Crowes once. I could talk about live shows for forever, though.
We're probably not going to, but yeah. Anyways.
Well, you know, it's an important part of it. I mean, and especially these days when there's been such a limitation on live shows. But I do have an old sort of photo album that I keep all my ticket stubs from over the years. And, you know, going back to Styx in 1978 and the Rolling Stones in 1981 at Rich Stadium and everything since then. And, yeah, I mean, there was very few bands at the time that I missed. There's always a few, and there's always a few regrets. So who, on that note, Lindsay, who would be a band that you would have killed to see that you never got to see, or an artist?
Oh, Sharon Jones and Charles Bradley. If you're not familiar with them,
I'm sitting here smiling going, yeah, okay.
That's okay. Yeah. They're just incredibly soulful. It's really sort of, it was a resurgence of soul. It like sort of like that Motown, like soul R&B, just but passionate, really beautiful stuff that, you know, it came back in the 2000s. And in fact, they were both on the same record label and both of them passed away. And I didn't get a chance to see either one of them play live. And I really regret it because if you do actually YouTube any footage of these two, it is just a powerhouse of just, literally you feel like you're being transported back to the 60s and 70s of those beautiful eras of just dancing and having fun, or like literally getting your heart broken. And they're putting it all out on stage, 100% every moment of that show. So, yeah, I that's for sure was it breaks my heart that I never got to see that.
Incredible. I'll be looking them up after the show. Thank you for that. Yeah, it's always nice to discover somebody that you haven't heard of. And I'm always surprised when I haven't. But, Darren, how about you? Is there any sort of standouts?
If I could build a time machine to maybe 1971... I probably wanted to go see Edgar Winter's White Trash. Now, that's not a racial slur.
No.
That's actually the name of the band, and that was his soul band, and it was effing awesome. Mm. And it was fantastic. I have to say, you know, I probably instinctively would rather see that than Almonds at the Fillmore.
Wow. Yeah, that's a big statement. Both would be incredible. And it's funny, I've got some live stuff of them from way back, as I'm sure you do. I've seen Johnny Winter in concert, and I've seen Edgar Winter in concert, and I've seen Rick Derringer in concert, but never all of them together. And it's funny, Johnny Winter and Edgar Winter both played the Kitchener Blues Festival years ago, but they never actually played together. They played on different nights. So I thought, oh, we might have a sort of a reunion here. And then a couple of years later, I think Rick Derringer had played as well. I think he was in White Trash. I can't remember who else was in that band, but
I love that man. He was a producer. He produced a lot of the Winter Brothers stuff. I have a lot of respect for Rick Derringer. And Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo is badass, especially when Johnny Winter does it.
Yeah,
it's a
killer song.
I like that song a lot, huh?
Yeah, I'm a huge Johnny Winter fan. I saw him at a small
club. Did you know there's a line in that song about the band called the Jokers who were laying it down? You know that one?
Yeah.
Apparently, that was about Dickie Betts. I think Rick Derringer saw him in Sarasota, Florida, or someplace, Tallahassee, perhaps. And so that was a little line to pay tribute to great Dickie Betts.
got something of a special surprise for you tonight. People keep asking me, where's your brother?
Johnny. Woo! There he is.
Hey, back.
couple of fave artists and fave songs of Lindsey Coleman and Darren Flower from Wayward Saints. The first one was Sharon Jones doing an amazing cover of Midnight Rider, the famous Allman Brothers song. And the second one was Edgar Winter's White Trash doing a version of Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo, which was written by White Trash producer Rick Derringer, also a guitar player, singer, songwriter in his own right. And it also featured the lead guitar and lead vocals of Edgar Winter's brother, Johnny. Just being conscious of time, I want to kind of fast forward a little bit and talk a little bit. And I've heard some of the stories about how this band came to be, how the Wayward Saints came to be. So maybe Darren, I think you were kind of the impetus of this band, and maybe tell us how that all started and how everybody else came to be part of this great band.
Well, me and Lindsey were in bands before this. And mine was just about ready to fizzle out, 2015. I definitely, you know, keep my ear open to see what kind of talent is out there. And I found out about Lindsey around 2016, if I remember correctly. And I remember thinking, what a voice. And I used to think, imagine what being a band with her would be like, you know?
Well, he's regretting that choice now. So.
I doubt it.
No.
I'm just kidding.
And I had the very same reaction when I was like, what a voice. I might have said, what a effing voice, but anyways.
Well, hey. I'm going to keep it PG, brother.
I'll take it. No, it's great. I mean, yeah, it's kind. Darren actually bugged me for a couple of years, actually. I think it was about 2 years, and I was in another project at the time, so I was like, that's cool, but you know, I've got something going on, I don't really want to split my attention right now. But he just kept at it, and then when that band kind of, you know, petered out a little bit, then he was like, hey, I heard you know, things are kind of slow now with that band, what do you think? And I actually still kept him, and so just, it was like, hey, yeah, maybe, I'm not sure. And he sent me some stuff, and I liked it, but I was like, hey, what else do you have? And it wasn't until he sent me the next batch of songs that, what was really cool about it was that I was like, oh, that's good, I like that. And then, but you know, I got to go to work, whatever. So I turned it off. I only heard about 30 seconds of the first song that he sent me. He sent [S2] Right. [S1] Me like, I think 4 or 5. And then I went to get ready for work, and I couldn't get the riff out of my head. I just could, it kept playing in my head, and I started thinking lyrics right away, and I went, oh no, like, this is crazy. I'm going to have to call this guy back, because I have to sit down and write out what's in my head, and that doesn't happen too often. So it looks like I'm actually going to meet up with Darren finally after a couple of years of him bothering me, but I'm so glad I did. And you know, the rest of the guys in the band, I mean, they're so talented, and they're so genuine and professional, but we just all really, we get along. And when we don't, we're professional about it. And everybody's got such great, cool, tasteful backgrounds. And they're all just a little bit different, but there's still such common denominators in terms of our influences that it really just, it's a secret sauce to the fact that we've all been in bands before, but you know, we finally are with the company of people that really want to see something through, and we're willing to put in the work. So I'd say that's really the magic of this band, and the fact that, you know, I think we all have the talent to back it up. I personally feel like everybody in this band has got something really great to bring to the table. So
yeah, they sure do. So the other guys, you have Aaron Bennett on drums and Justin Bennett, who you said no relation, as the other guitar player, and Bill Bertram on bass. So talk about how those guys came to join the band.
Well, you know, I live in Mississauga, which is not too far from the KW area where you're from, an hour away.
Very close.
And the thing about Mississauga is, the people that are in the 30-ish area, they seem to really like the modern rock, which is cool, right? But there isn't a lot of us people who kind of like the classic rock style. That's what I find.
Yeah.
So one day I got a friend request from Justin Bennett about 5 years ago. I'm like, okay, he's from Mississauga. I kind of sussed him out a little bit. He seemed a little cool. He had really cool hair. So, you know, that's one of the prerequisites. And I added him.
I have noticed, you know, everybody in the band has great hair.
Yeah, you know, we spent a lot of time on it, to be honest with you.
Well, with the exception of Aaron, who has none, but that's okay.
Don't tell him that. No, that's sorry. Not true.
Actually, yeah, I didn't want to bring that up. But I thought that was self-induced. I thought that was just a look he was going for, sort of the...
No, that's what makes it great, is because that really makes him stand out and behind the kit.
So with Justin, you know, we were in the same city. I started chatting up a little bit, and he added me because he always saw me posting about, like, Humble Pie this and Almonds that and, you know, Led Zeppelin this and whatever. And him... He's kind of an anomaly in Mississauga, I feel, because I can't find people of this age bracket around this area. And he lives about 10, 15 minutes away. So I got a chance to meet him, and we got along pretty well. And then shortly after, we decided, you know, well, you're not in a band. I'm trying to, you know, put together a band. Why don't we play guitar together and, you know, maybe have fun?
Nice.
And as it turns out, we get along very, very well. He's a very special band member.
Yeah, Justin's great.
Yeah, he's great.
And they really complement each other in terms of their playing styles. I mean, they're different enough, but also, again, there's that common factor it's really interesting to watch them write. I've actually never seen that before. I've been in a bunch of bands where, you know, there's two guitar players and, you know, there's a lot of back and forth, whereas these guys, it's very little back and forth. They're able to communicate with each other so efficiently about what they're trying to achieve or what the ideas are, and then all of a sudden you're like, whoa, we might have to write another song around that, because that's amazing too, you know?
Stuart's a guitar player and a songwriter, so he gets it, right? So here's the thing. Me and Justin, we have two very different styles of guitar playing.
Totally.
But it's kind of like a peanut butter and jelly kind of thing. And I feel that way with her as well, too.
Yeah.
With peanut butter and jelly. I like that, too. But with Justin, I have a peanut butter and jelly thing going on as two guitar players. Mm-hmm. And with Lindsay, I find we have a peanut butter and jelly thing going on with, you know, guitar player and singer as well, too. So I think, like, you know, we work together really well. We work together really well. And it's great. And it's actually rather effortless as well, too, which is great.
Yeah, when you're talking about the rhythm section, I mean, Aaron's the second drummer in the band. But really, when we had to take a bit of a break because we were trying to find a replacement. But you know, Aaron's energy—he's just infectious. He's definitely the clown of the band. We're all pretty clownish; like we love to clown around and be silly. And but Aaron's one-liners—I mean, man, you know what he comes up with and how his brain works. Like he really keeps the humor going. But he's also just a thunderous player, which is really cool. And then, and in terms of Bill, I mean, you've got. You got the nicest personality in a man you could ask for, and honestly, like he brings the eclectic, more worldly influence, because you know he's from Brazil and he's just got a really cool, you know, not so standard type of playing happening that really, you know, it peppers that flavor in, and it's really unique.
Yeah, that's nice. Well, and the camaraderie is a huge part of it. I mean, I've played in bands and done lights for band and roadies with bands. And I found a lot of the moments, you know, obviously everybody's in it for the music and the love of music, but if you get along great with the people and you have humor and you have a fun time, it makes it a lot easier, especially when the more you work together, obviously in tight spaces in the studio and on stage and all these interviews and things like that, it can be like a five-way marriage. And so it sounds like you guys
You're spending a lot of time together. You're also making art together, which is extremely subjective and also extremely personal.
Yeah.
So very easy to covet something and not be open-minded and be closed-minded because it's so personal to you.
Right.
Your line, your riff, your this, we have to remember you're a part of a collective. And I think the thing about this band that I find really fun is that, you know, everybody's pretty professional about understanding that what we do is for the benefit of the song.
Yeah.
And that we don't get too protective over what we've brought to it. We're open-minded about maybe making some changes. And that's new to me. There's a lot of bands I've been in the past where there's always some friction or some ego or, you know, one or two people in the band have a harder time with that concept and you get through it. But it, you know, when it keeps happening, it's kind of like that the relationship just, you know, those ties start to break down.
Sure.
And I just don't find that we have those issues. And when those issues do come up, we handle it well. We get through it really well. So, you know, it's the kind of people you want to be married to, I guess, is what what I'm saying in short.
That's awesome. Yeah, it sounds really great. So, and hopefully it doesn't become like one of these Spinal Tap things where you keep losing drummers or things happen to the drummers.
Yeah, and misfortune.
That was my last band. I swear to God, my last band had 18 different people over 12 years.
Yeah. I can relate.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably more the common thing. I mean, and it's funny how, especially when people are younger, and maybe that's a little bit of what it is that you guys aren't teenagers anymore. You know, you've been through your 20s and you've matured a bit and you've had the experience of the other bands. And the fact, Lindsay, that you took your time, you know, kind of playing hard to get with Darren before there was some sort of connection with you being inspired lyrically. So is that generally how the songwriting works? Is it that the guys are doing the music and you're doing the lyrics, or is it kind of a mix of different things, or how does the process work?
I mean, so far, yeah, I'd say that what's also interesting about this band that I've not been a part of, like in previous bands, I would do a lot of the writing and I bring the idea to the table and we'd write around it. And then sometimes they would come up with a cool vibe and then we just build the whole thing around that. With this band, when I came in, they had so many ideas formed, especially between Justin and Darren, that we're still working through a lot of those ideas. So I'm building on a lot of things that have already been built lyrically, and, you know, things get changed and we mold it together as a group. But the core ideas and a lot of these, I mean, a large foundation of these songs are already set, and that's a lot of the work has been done by just Justin and Darren in that department.
Well, we kind of like have this clay thing going around that we pass to the next member and the next member.
Yeah.
So they had a chance to put their thumbprints on it as well, too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when we pass it back, it's like, whoa, WTF, right?
Yeah.
It's like, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, they give us this interesting shell that most of the time literally has an intro and outro and everything in between. And then we go, whoa, okay, what are we going to do with this? And that's basically the two of them get together and then we go, oh, wow, all right.
You know? And it's interesting, too. Like, I have to, okay, do you mind me sharing a kind of cool story?
Sure.
Okay, real talk, okay. So I'm guessing you're familiar with the song Pay No Mind, and you've spotted like 100 million times, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, I know.
100 well, million so, on one.
Of course. Ooh, of course. Better. I've been keeping track, okay? Well, you know, the song was kind of flipped on its head.
Yeah, I think I've made some enthusiastic comments, which maybe should have been censored. Anyways, go on.
Okay. Well, you know, I presented her. I was kind of working on this, like, this riff, and I was showing her what I thought might be the intro, maybe the verse, and she totally flipped it around. I'm like, WTF, how is this supposed to work? And my brain couldn't compute it properly.
Yeah.
But then she started, like, you know, jiving and doing her thing over it. I'm like, by Jove,
so,
she got it.
Yeah, so essentially
the verse
part is what Darren intended to be the intro. And I said, no, I want to play with Justin's guitar riff. I want to dance around that riff with my vocals and actually make it even more jangly, because I just love that part. I mean, there's such a hook there that I want to play with that and make it kind of interesting. You know, you could go straight on a verse and then give that the intro, but I'm always going to want to hear that again, so why not make everybody hear it a little bit more?
And the other thing is too, so with future ideas, I always think to myself, well, I have this, but don't get, you know, too committed to it, because you never know when things get flipped around, probably for the better anyways.
Well, do you think it was for the better?
I think so.
Okay.
Like, you know, well, you know, like, it's one way, like, I had it kind of mapped out a little bit, but then, like, you know, seeing, like, the finished product, I'm like, goddamn. But anyways, so, like, you know, when we come up with stuff, we always think, about not being very committal to it, because things can change, you know, very quickly.
Yeah, and we have a hard rule in the band that every idea gets tried, so that everybody knows that they've got a voice. So if you have an idea, we're going to try it.
That's perfect.
And I think that helps to keep things open-minded.
So yeah.
Sometimes it takes the song longer to get finished, but I mean, we all feel like we have a hand in it.
And is the goal ultimately to get an EP or an album out sometime by next year in time for the touring season?
The goal is to have an album by next year. We're not entirely sure when it will be finished. We're hoping that it'll be finished within next year. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And videos for both songs now, right?
Yeah, we actually have, there's actually two videos for both. There's a regular video, an official video, and there's a behind the scenes video for both songs.
Yeah.
Well, the behind the scenes for Pay No Mind is actually inside our member area, which you can sign up for free. And there's a lot of cool stuff that, you know, we don't release publicly in there. You sign up for free, you kind of get, you know, those extras. And then in the wild, the behind the scenes is public as well as the official.
Okay. And then you guys did a lip sync contest, which I saw as well. That was kind of neat. So, and then I mentioned earlier, sort of before we got on air here, about you're selling t-shirts and you're selling buttons. Any upcoming shows? Do we have anything booked?
No, not at the moment. And we're not super concerned about that yet. We really are wanting to fine tune our set and really fine tune these songs. I mean, I feel like the approach a lot of bands take is that the song's good enough, let's go play it live, let's test it out, tweak it later. That's just not the way we work. We want to make sure that it's, that we're proud of it and that we can stand behind it, and then it's studio ready, and then we'll be starting to play some shows. So it's just not an immediate concern. We are really itching to get back on stage, mind you. That's where we really love to be. But again, the songs really need to be where we need them to be.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, it definitely shows. I mean, the impact when I first heard In the Wild and then with the second song, Pay No Mind, it's incredible how great these songs sound. I mean, how well produced, how well sung they are, how well played they are, how well written they are. I mean, in a very short time, you guys have had a lot of success with building a fan base and with the streaming and with members coming out to your live events that you've been doing and things like that, which has been very cool. So obviously busy.
We're so grateful for that.
Yeah. That's great. I want to wrap things up with the questionnaire. Well, we can start with Lindsay. What is your favorite word?
Love.
Beautiful.
My favorite word's love. Yeah.
Darren?
Liquor.
Well, I was starting
that's
to see
a new hard liquor.
I was starting to see a pattern there. Cheers. All right. Least favorite word, Lindsay?
Fear.
Great.
Yeah. I actually have that. I have them tattooed on me. I have the word love. I have the word love, and then there's a line, and then fear is underneath it. And the message is just to always try to keep love over fear in my day to day. In my mindset, because I feel like human beings actually only react out of two places. They're either reacting out of love or out of fear. And so the more I can try to remind myself to stay in the top half of that, the better my day gets and the better it gets for people around me. And usually better things start happening. So, but it's not an easy thing to do. You have to keep trying.
And Darren, get a favorite word out of you is liquor. Oh yeah, sorry. I don't know if you had a more serious word, but no, it's okay. We need some levity. He is serious though. He's very serious about his liquor.
If I can say the least favorite, I think maybe I'll say greed.
Greed. Mm. All right, perfect.
I don't like how that people can act sometimes out of money. They're very greedy sometimes. Not all people, but some people.
Yeah.
And I'm not really into that, so I might go with that.
Yeah.
All right. Amen. What's next?
No, I'm serious. I'm serious too.
Yeah. I 100% agree with you on that one. So what turns you on creatively, spiritually, emotionally, any or all three?
Is that for me or for her?
We'll go back to Lindsay on this one and then.
All right. Sure. Okay. So for all three, I'd say what turns me on creatively, spiritually, and emotionally is being open-minded, you know, living in the moment for all three, really. You know, if you think about it, when you're trying your best to live in the moment, again, something really hard to do.
Yeah.
Really hard. But when you can, I find that they all really, I don't know, they all just really come together pretty easily. So
that's awesome. Darren, for you?
For me, what turns me on is something that stimulates my brain. And I'm always looking for the perfect chord progression with the perfect melody / harmony and little dressing. So I'm really into the art of the music. There's so many different things attached to music, but I still always, I'm like searching for that elusive melody, chord progression, harmony, such.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right. Lindsay, what turns you off?
Negativity. Yeah, the exact opposite. Like I'm not into it. I don't like it. It just debilitates creativity. It debilitates so much, you know, it just puts a big, huge wall up for possibility. And I'm not a fan.
Sure does. Darren, for you?
For me, I'm a very fact-based person, so I guess fake news. If you actually don't know factually what you're talking about, I kind of get upset.
Favorite curse. Good. Favorite curse word.
I'm kind of editing myself. That's one of my favorites.
So, like, I'm a big fan of the "see you next Tuesday" word.
She
I
is.
Feel,
wow.
As a female, actually, I feel like it's underused. I feel like we should own it, reclaim it, have fun with it. People who are easily offended by that is I feel like I come on, like
I'm trying to keep this PG.
No, but come on, like, why are you taking yourself so seriously? It's like yeah, it's not yeah. a big deal. But my favorite is the mother F bomb. Yeah,
that's a good one.
Well, it's so versatile.
I love that one too. It's part of my repertoire.
All right, Lindsay, what sound or noise do you love?
I read that question in advance, and it was a no brainer. It's ever since I was a kid, the sound of a willow tree leaves in the wind, like a big full willow tree, just blowing in the wind. There's nothing like it. It's not necessarily white noise because there's kind of like this twinkle to it. And as a kid, I used to like literally take naps under big willow trees. So, and just fall asleep. And so that's my favorite for sure.
That's awesome. So Darren, what sound or noise do you love?
When my lead singer starts singing.
Oh, that's nice. I like that. I'll take it, but yeah. I'll take it.
I'm the biggest fan.
It's an incredible sound. And what sound or noise do you hate?
Is that for me or for her?
Well, we can go back and forth.
That's any scraping. So whether it be that chalkboard stuff, but or specifically, more specifically, because I feel like that's a general answer. Like when someone scrapes their fork on their teeth, like that scraping is I can't even. First of all, where's your manners? Secondly, you know. Like, why would you do that to anyone around you? And do you not hear that when you do that? It's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's a terrible sound. What about you, Darren?
I don't know. You know, the old nails on the chalkboard thing. Of course, I haven't seen the classroom in a couple of years. But, you know, it's like, give me the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, it's a terrible sound. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt, Lindsay, if there is one?
Ooh, what profession other than my own? When I was younger, it's funny because I'm sitting with two radio DJs. When I was younger, I wanted to be a radio DJ, pretty fierce. But now that I'm older, I actually want to try it at some point in my life. It's a bucket list item to write a book. So.
Cool. Any ideas what the book would be about?
For sure. I know what I want the book to be about. But that's a surprise.
Okay. Well, when you're ready for that, then we'll come back and we'll do another interview and I'll branch out from musicians to book writers.
I love that.
Yeah. Writing, creativity. It's all the same for me. What about you, Darren?
Well, I often thought about writing a book as well too, but I often fantasize about, you know, writing for TV, you know, like comedy shows and stuff like that. So, you know, that's one of like my pet passions or passion projects, whatever the hell you call it, you know, but sometimes I think about that and how much fun it would be. When I was a younger lad, I used to think about teaching at high school, and I don't know how much fun it would be for the proverbial light bulb to go over somebody's head.
What profession would you not like to do?
Okay, so that's easy for me. I would not want to be a police officer.
No.
See, I would actually like to be a police officer. That's funny that you say that.
Yeah.
I've watched a lot of Law & Order SVU, and sometimes I think about him to be like, you know, the sex cop or this narc. I should be a good narc.
You'd be a good narc?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to do that job. It's
really?
No.
Okay.
I think it's really, it's a strange environment to live in. You want to do good, but it's really hard to do that. And yeah. I think that would be really frustrating for my personality to be constantly up against something I can't actually make like significant change.
Right.
So
right.
A little too tough for me.
Yeah. And Darren, what about you, man?
What I would not like to do is be at a cubicle for 8-9 hours a day doing data entry. Yeah. Maybe some people will find it like awesome and really engaging and whatnot. And bless their hearts. But I don't think that's the right job for me. So I don't think I would be, you know, best suited at that.
Sure.
And lastly, Lindsay, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Overall, I'd like to say you did. I'd like to hear you did well. You know, I'd like to know I did at least well. I don't need good. I don't need fantastic. Just you did well.
Just a passing grade. Darren, for you?
I don't think God would let me in.
Yeah.